This is Nikon and Zeiss Ambassador Danny Eid, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 109, the Photokina 2016 Mega Episode, part one. In this episode, Sony keeps A-mount alive with a big announcement, Sigma drops three great new lenses, Olympus announces the OMD EM1 Mark II, Fujifilm enters the mirrorless medium format arena, SanDisk unveils a new 1TB SD card, GoPro finally releases its Karma drone and two new action cams, and Nikon's key mission offerings are available in three different flavors. All that and more in episode 109 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Danny, for opening this show. I greatly appreciate it, brother. Based in Dubai, Danny Eid specializes in corporate, architecture, landscape, and travel photography. And when you see his images, you're going to be stunned. His photos on 500px alone have been viewed over 6 million times. And when you see them, you're going to understand why Danny is tapped by Nikon, Carl Zeiss, and others to represent their brands. He's a kind man, a true artist, and you're missing out on some truly inspiring, wonderful imagery if you don't visit his website over at DannyEid.com. That's DannyEid.com. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 109 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate you hitting the subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode, as well as telling your friends on social media and elsewhere and helping to get the word out about this show. I have a feeling this is going to be a longer than usual episode with Photokina 2016 happening in Germany, and we're going to have more in the following episode as well, because you can't cover it all in just one episode. So hang on, and with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. It's alive! It's alive! If you've been listening to this show for a while, you'll recall that back in October of 2015, I declared Sony's older A-mount system as having zombie status. It looked and smelled dead, but it was still kicking for some reason. Reason being, the company's been all about their E-mount cameras, the Sony artisans rarely talked about A-mount, and it's like the company just wasn't feeling it anymore. You know, we've seen refreshes to pretty much every Sony E-mount body, and not a whole lot on the Sony A front. They let a long, long time go by before dropping another camera. And that was many months ago now. You know, there were many that were in the A-mount system that loved it, but they were envious of the love that was given to Sony E with the A7R Mark II, the A7S Mark II, the A6300, and a whole lot more. And all those G-Master lenses and everything else that Sony came out with. But there was nothing new for A-mount in forever. So it was completely reasonable when myself and others declared A-mount dead. You know, it sure looked that way. I mean, on social media, Sony UK themselves famously said that nothing new was planned for A-mount. And that's when I gave it its zombie status back in October 2015. In my mind, without an official ironclad announcement, or at least 2 or 3 years going by, you just really never know. And then at Photokina this week, Sony dropped a bombshell by announcing the A99 Mark II, a 42.4 megapixel full-frame A-mount camera with specs that top those of the recently announced Canon 5D Mark IV. Now, of course, if you're already heavily invested in Canon glass and flashes, accessories, etc., stick with the Canon and carry on, you're good. But if you're looking to make the switch or you're just not married to any system at this point, I think the new A99 Mark II is compelling enough to warrant serious consideration. Very serious consideration. We don't know what the future of A-mount holds. I mean, some have theorized online that Sony is trying to sell off all their A-mount glass inventory with this camera, but that seems like a bit cynical and a huge stretch. I mean, why put all the effort into developing this new camera just to sell some lenses that you have in stock? That just doesn't make any sense. Also, the third-party lens makers like Tamron and all the others obviously see value in still making A-mount glass because they're continuing to offer them. Now, granted, more A-mount glass is selling because that's hot, but there's still a lot of Sony A-mount users out there, and they have lenses available to them. So Sony appears to, at least in the short term, see a market for A-mount, and with this new body, I don't see why not. And here's why. Sony has yet to release the rumored A9 flagship body, which can handle sports, photojournalism work, etc., pretty much anything you throw at it. But there are now tons of people out there that are familiar with how awesome Sony cameras are, who may consider something on the A-mount side rather than go Canon and Nikon. There's enough brand awareness now for Sony cameras that that could actually happen. And also, there's certainly a ton of amazing A-mount glass out there for people. So the A99 Mark II, with its specs and the price that it's being offered at, is a compelling consideration. This new camera has a brand new back-illuminated 42.4 megapixel XMOR R CMOS sensor with a gapless-on-chip design for better light gathering and faster data readout. What results from that is low noise and greater dynamic range from ISO 100 to 25,600. This camera is also able to go down to ISO 50 and as high as 102,400 in the extended range. Now, of course, you're not going to want to do that because that's a digital snowstorm, but if you needed to, you could. Sony has included its 4D focus system for the very first time in a full-frame body, and its hybrid phase detect AF system utilizes 79 dedicated phase detect points with 399 focal plane phase detection points. And it's those hybrid points that help greatly with acquiring AF quickly and tracking moving subjects. There's also a brand new 5-axis in-body image stabilization system in the A99 Mark II, which compensates for 4.5 stops of shake. A really sweet feature of the A99 Mark II is its ability to detect the flicker of artificial light and time its shutter to significantly reduce its ill effects. If you've ever shot under really horrible lighting like that, and you've seen a band moving across your photos with colors that are all jacked, you'll appreciate this camera. Now, as for video, it smokes the specs of the Canon 5D Mark IV by being able to shoot 4K video with full pixel readout, no pixel binning, and uses the awesome XAVC-S format. And as you may know, the Canon uses MP4. It can shoot 4K at 100 megabits per second, has picture profiles, time code, clean HDMI output, zebra stripes, and S-Log3 and S-Log2 gamma. If you're into video at all, those are drop-the-mic specs compared to the Canon 5D Mark IV. You know, Canon seems to be happy to cripple their DSLRs when it comes to video, thinking that people are going to bump up to that more expensive cinema line. And you know what? People don't want that. You've got companies like Sony and others that are doing video right. And when you compare the specs of the A99 Mark II to the Canon 5D Mark IV, you see those glaring omissions. Now, I know some Canon people don't like to hear it, but when you compare the specs, tell me it's not true. If users don't like it, they should complain to Canon or get something different, I think. Maybe Canon will finally get a clue and see that people want more out of their DSLRs, especially when other companies have these amazing features in them. And in some cases, for a lot less money. The A99 Mark II is 8% smaller than its predecessor, has an improved grip, a magnesium alloy body that's dust and moisture resistant, a 2.36 million dot OLED TrueFinder EVF with 0.78 magnification, and a 3-inch 1.23 million dot tilting LCD around back. It shoots uncompressed RAW, has no low-pass filter, which is great, no camera should these days, does 12 frames per second continuous and burst, has dual SD card slots, Bluetooth, and its shutter is rated for 300,000 actuations. All right. Those right there, my friends, are some pretty undeniable pro specs. Now, while I don't know what Sony's future is for A-mount, I think it's pretty clear that with the introduction of the A99 Mark II, A-mount is clearly not dead. In fact, I suspect that we're going to see more A-mount line cameras coming out here soon. If you want an A99 Mark II, you can get your hands on one in November 2016 for $3,200 US. So A-mount is not dead. Zombie status, I don't know. I think it might actually be alive again, and I'm willing to admit that. Next. All right, if you love Sigma Glass like I do, you may be interested in one or more of the three new lenses that they just announced. First up is a lens that portrait photographers have been requesting in droves, and one that we've heard rumors of going way back to February of 2015, and that is the 85mm f1.4G HSM Art Series, a lens the company is calling, quote, the ultimate portrait lens, end quote. You know, it's funny because everyone says that, right? In this case, you never know, but there's a lot of other great portrait lenses out there. Sigma says this sweet lens is made up of 14 elements and 12 groups, has two SLD, that's special low dispersion glass elements, and one, quote, glass element with a high rate of anomalous partial dispersion and diffraction, end quote. Okay, that's lens nerd speak for this lens is made of the good stuff, right? It has a re-engineered AF system built in, has full-time manual focus override, and is engineered to handle all those high megapixel bodies that are out there. As we've said before here on the show, most of the lenses are going to have to be completely re-engineered because these high megapixel cameras that are coming out, the lenses that are out there currently can't resolve those many megapixels. And it's another opportunity for them to sell you a new lens, of course. So there's that benefit. This surely great Sigma 85mm f1.4 is available in Canon, Nikon, and Sigma mounts starting in late October 2016 for $1,200 US. And when you think about it, that's actually not too bad of a price for what they're saying is the ultimate portrait lens. We'll see about that. In addition to the 85, they also announced a 12-24 f4 DG HSM Art Series lens, which likewise is designed to handle today's modern sensors. It has the largest aspherical glass mold in the industry, and Sigma says this new ultra-wide has virtually no distortion, flare, or ghosting, and it also has that same AF system that's in the 85. This lens features FLD glass, which Sigma says is, quote, equivalent to calcium fluoride in performance, end quote, which yields great image quality from the center to the edges. Available in the same mounts and time frame for release, the Sigma 12-24 f4 will go for about $1,600. A good chunk of change, but a lot of people are going to be buying that lens, let me tell you. Now, for the sports and wildlife shooters out there, Sigma has dropped a big honking lens on us. The 500mm f4 DG OSM HSM sports lens is the company's first telephoto prime in its sports line for DSLRs. Of this lens, the company says, quote, designed for the professional sports and wildlife shooter, the ultra-durable lens features magnesium alloy components, a carbon fiber hood, a water and oil-resistant front element, and is dust and splash-proof. The lens incorporates two FLD and one SLD glass elements, while the optimized power distribution helps minimize spherical aberration and axial chromatic aberration, end quote. It also has an advanced optical stabilizer that helps you switch between modes for shooting handheld, as well as panning both vertically and horizontally. And as you might imagine, a ginormous lens like this is going to cost you a pretty penny. A very shiny pretty penny. A lot of pretty pennies, actually. Specifically, it's going to go for $6,000 US. Now, that's a lot of money, but there's no doubt that this lens will be worth it. And you know what? There's a lot more expensive lenses out there. I have a feeling that even at that price point, they're going to be selling a ton of these lenses because it looks awesome. This bad boy will be available in late October for Canon and Sigma mounts, and a month later for Nikon. These look to be three great lenses, and if you haven't had a look at Sigma's offerings lately, you're definitely missing out. I own two of their lenses, and they are stellar. Next. Another great camera announced at Photokina was the Olympus OMD EM1 Mark II, a compelling update to an already beloved camera. Olympus's flagship is built for speed, and there is no denying that. This new EM1 Mark II that's on the way can shoot 18 frames per second normally, which is incredible enough as it is. But with the autofocus locked, its electronic shutter will shoot 60 frames per second. That's crazy talk right there. For most people, though, being able to shoot 20.4 megapixel RAW files at 18 frames a second is going to be more than helpful when shooting fast action. While they announced this camera at Photokina, it's still in development, but the company says that its new high-speed quad-core TruePic 8 image processor is a blazing 3.5 times faster than the camera this replaces. The OMD EM1 Mark II is going to have 121 cross-type on-chip phase detection and contrast detection AF points, making this an incredible Micro Four Thirds body and one I think that's going to be a massive seller for the company. I mean, the original one is already a wonderful camera, and many of you in our audience who own one can't imagine using anything else. Well, until the Mark II is available, of course. And don't forget the company's exceptional 5-axis in-body image stabilization with 6.5 stops of compensation with compatible lenses. It also has digital cinema 4K video, a fully articulating 3-inch touchscreen LCD, a high-speed 2.36 million dot electronic viewfinder, 50 megapixel high-resolution shot mode, dual UHS 2 SD card slots. Its shutter is rated to 200,000 actuations. They say its battery is going to last 37% longer. Its charger works 50% faster, and it's dust, splash, and freeze-proof. Yeah, those are some incredible features right there. Listen to those and tell me that Canon and Nikon are innovating as much as they could be, right? This is coming from somebody who just spent $2,000 on a Nikon D500. I love that camera, and it's got a lot of great features. But when you hear what Olympus is doing, you're like, man, why can't I have some of that in my camera, right? Now, there's no word on when Olympus is going to be releasing this awesome camera. But, you know, they made a point to say it would be available sometime later this year. They also didn't mention pricing, but their current model, the OMD EM1, currently goes for $900 US, and it is a great, great camera. When this camera comes out, that one's going to be an even better price and a great value. Next. As you all know, I'm not a big fan of putting all my eggs in one basket. So when it's available, you're not going to see me using the SanDisk 1TB SDXC card. That's going to be a long, long time off for me. For now, the 128GB XQD card that's in my Nikon D500 is about as big as I'm comfortable with going. And I've got an SD card in that second slot for backup. Like I said, eggs, basket, not good. You know, over time, the megapixels in our cameras keep creeping up. Many are shooting 4K video and thus the need for bigger cards. But 1TB, I mean, that is huge. Imagine having everything on that card and it fails. No bueno. Not good. The announcement by the company at Photokina comes 16 years after SanDisk announced the world's first 64-megabyte card. Megabyte. Not gigabyte. That's tiny. So here we are, not even two decades later, with a card being announced that has 16,000 times the capacity of that 64-megabyte card. That is just amazing. SanDisk owner Western Digital says these new 1TB cards are targeted towards those who are not only shooting ultra-high-res photos, but 4K video, virtual reality, 360-degree video, and video surveillance in HD. You may recall that in 2015, Canon announced it was developing a DSLR that shoots 120-megapixel images. Well, guess what? One of these 1TB cards from SanDisk could hold over 4,700 of those 210-megabyte files. Craziness. Now imagine the kind of computer that you're going to need to deal with all of that, right? I can't even count how many times people have messaged me who got a 5DS or a 5DSR from Canon. You know, those are 50-megapixel cameras, right? And then they realize that their aging computer is struggling with those files compared to the previous model that they had, which was probably like half as many megapixels. Not to mention all the space that you need to store all of those, and backup drives for those photos, of course. These are all things to consider when you step up to a higher resolution camera, because your needs go way, way up. Not just in storage, like I said, but in processing power. If you think Lightroom is slow now, just throw 50-megapixel images at it. Yeah, ask anybody. That is not a lot of fun right there. Now, there's no word when these 1TB cards will be out, nor how much they'll cost, but back in 2014, when their 512GB SDXC card was announced, it came in at $800 US. 2 years later here in 2016, you can have one for $345. I tell you, if you're out shooting and you lose one of those cards, tell me that doesn't hurt. That is a lot of money in a small package like that. Next. The rumors were true, and Fujifilm has announced its new mirrorless medium format camera, the GFX 50S. Okay, that name doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, but you don't buy a camera like this for the name, do you? The first camera in their new GFX line packs 51.4 megapixels, and according to the company, quote, will deliver unmatched and exceptional image quality, end quote. Okay, so Hasselblad might have something to say about that, but there's no doubt that this camera is going to deliver great, great images. And images that are made with this camera are processed through its X Processor Pro, which is widely accepted as producing colors and tones beautifully. Listen, I'm sold on Fujifilm's ability to produce gorgeous files. The awesome X-T2 that our friends from DigiDirect down in Australia sent up to me recently produces JPEGs that are simply stunning straight out of the camera. I don't know what they're doing at Fujifilm, but they have the secret sauce when it comes to that stuff, I tell you. The files are just gorgeous, and anyone who's got a Fujifilm camera can tell you the same. Their picture profiles are just beautiful, I tell you. Anyhow, the GFX 50S has a new Fujifilm G format sensor, which measures in at 43.8 by 32.9 millimeters. And while it's a 4:3 aspect ratio, you can also choose 3:2, 1:1, also known as square, 4:5, 6:7, and 6:17 as well. These are all aspect ratios, of course, that we've seen over the years in large and medium format cameras. So you've got your bases covered, no matter what you want to shoot there. But unlike those cameras, this one is more compact, lighter, and like the X-T2, has a number of buttons and dials. So if you like the tactile nature of photography, and I personally do, you're going to love this camera. The GFX 50S doesn't have a built-in viewfinder, but rather detachable EVF so you can remove it if you don't require it. Let's say you're attached to an external monitor and you don't need that. You don't have to have it attached. Now, there's an optional adapter so you can use that EVF in various angles. So that can see that coming in handy. But for me, the thing that I really like that they have is an optional vertical battery grip. That is awesomeness on a mirrorless medium format camera, I gotta say. You've got to hit the show notes for episode 109 to see how cool this camera is. It's very DSLR looking as it is, but when you put that grip on it, you would think that it was ready to go shoot a football game, I tell you. And yeah, I'm a nut. I want to give medium format football a try. That could be interesting, or it could be a total disaster. It's going to be one of the two. There's no doubt about it. Now, since this is a new system, there are new lenses that are designed specifically for its G mount, which have a short flange back distance of just 26.7 millimeters to reduce back focus distance, prevent vignetting, and provide edge-to-edge sharpness, according to the company. This system is going to launch with 6 lenses, and that is very much appreciated. You know, if you're going to come out with a pricey camera like this, you better deliver on glass and have all the focal lengths covered that people want. There's going to be a 63mm f2.8, that's a 50 in 35mm terms, a 32 to 64mm f4, which works out to be a 25 to 51mm, a 120mm f4 that's more like a 95, a 110mm f2 that's like an 87mm lens, a 23mm f4 that's an 18, and a 45mm f2.8, which works out to be a 35mm lens. You know, that's a decent lineup right there. And those that are looking for a mirrorless medium format system are definitely smiling really big right now, because this is going to be a lot cheaper than that Hasselblad that's out there, and a great alternative, I have a feeling. You know, I was just thinking, I could make that 120mm f4 work for football. That works out to be a 95mm lens in 35mm terms. And being able to crop way in with all that resolution that this body has, that's possible. Not ideal, but possible. I'm sure this shoots at like 1 frame a second or something, but that's okay. I can make it work. I'm always up for a challenge, obviously. The company says that we'll see this system sometime in early 2017, but hasn't yet committed to a date nor pricing, but suffice it to say, it's going to be a lot of money. Again, not as much money as a Hasselblad, but you're still going to need a whole lot of money to get one of these and a lens or two. You know, there's a lot of romanticism behind medium format because it's quote unquote what serious photographers used back in the day. And there's also a mystique about them. But the truth is, it's not the magic bullet to better photography. If you're horrible at lighting and you're horrible at composition, that's going to be even more evident with a camera like this. You get this kind of system when you're all dialed in on the art of photography. Hey, Ted. And you know what you're doing. Guys like Neil Kremer are going to absolutely kill with a system like this. Me, I want to take it out to the football field. I'm telling you, at some point, I'm going to shoot football with a mirrorless medium format camera. I'm going to make that happen. Next. Finally, after seemingly waiting forever, once great action cam maker GoPro enters the drone game on its own with a pretty darn cool foldable drone called Karma. Now, as if it wasn't cool enough being foldable, which is awesome, its stabilizer is removable so you can use it handheld or mounted to something else, thus making the Karma something more useful than your average drone. The Karma will take your Hero 5 Black, Hero 4 Black, or Hero 5 Session to new heights, literally, but its removable stabilization system attached to the new Karma grip will allow you to do so much more when you're not flying. You know, drones are awesome, but they're usually a huge pain to transport. The Karma, though, comes with an included backpack case, so one can more easily take their drone with them, thanks to its compactness. In my mind, that's going to be a major purchasing factor for a lot of people here. And this isn't a gimmick. That is a useful feature right there that everyone can appreciate. Especially if you go on bike rides, or you go on hikes maybe in beautiful areas, and you don't want to have to lug a drone around with you in a huge case. You got it folded up, you put it on your back in the backpack, and you're good to go. At the announcement, the company touted Karma's game-style flight and camera control, its portability, the removable stabilizer, and the GoPro passenger app, which allows someone else to control the camera while you fly the drone. Line of sight, of course. You have to have your eye on the thing. At least here in America, you do. That's the rules, after all, and you got to know those rules. Don't mess it up for everyone else, please. Speaking of the rules, a really cool feature of the Karma drone is that it's going to help you stay on the right side of the law because it has built-in no-fly zones, and a simple land button will help bring it home to you. It'll run for 20 minutes on a 1-hour charge, and GoPro has done something very much appreciated by making Karma easy to repair yourself. Remember, all drones will crash at some point. That's a given. I'm pretty sure that's like drone law number one. You will crash your drone at some point. And yes, you will cry. Okay, maybe you won't cry, but it's not going to be fun at all. And to that end, GoPro has made the arms of this drone easy to replace, and those replacements come with the necessary tools to get the job done. I think the Karma drone is going to be a huge winner for GoPro, and that's exactly what they need, a big, big win. Their stock is about a quarter of what it was at its high, and that's not helpful to them at all. They have lost so much market value because of that. GoPro has high hopes for this drone, and they're hoping that this is the drone that you buy this holiday season. And you know what? For many, I think Karma is going to be really appealing to them. It's compact, it's awesome, but with the action cam market being the way it is, everyone is in the drone business these days, and there are plenty of choices out there. So the company is playing to win here with an extremely competitive price. Now, if you have a compatible GoPro camera, the Karma can be had for just $800. And if you think about it, that is a great price. It's a great drone. It comes with a case. And then you've got that stabilizer, too, that you can use for handheld video to get great shots when you're not using your drone. So you got a bunch of different products in one for $800. That's amazing. If you don't already have a GoPro that'll work with the Karma drone, you can get a Karma with a Hero 5 Session for $1,000 or a Hero 5 Black for $1,100. And both of those prices represent $100 discounts off of both of those cameras. So that's a pretty good deal. You won't be able to purchase these until October 23rd of 2016. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how this affects GoPro as a company. I suspect they're going to sell a ton of Karma drones. And this might be exactly what they need to not only stay afloat, but to grow again. And hey, if GoPro wants to send me a Karma drone, I'd be happy to give it a whirl. Next. Along with GoPro releasing a couple new cameras, Nikon has finally released its Key Mission 360, along with the Key Mission 80 and 170 as well. Those numbers, by the way, correspond with the field of view of each camera, and it's interesting to see that Nikon is getting into this market, and in a much bigger way than we anticipated. The Key Mission 360 has two 20-megapixel sensors, one on each side, and captures 360-degree scenes with two f2.0 lenses. It can record in both 1080p full HD video as well as 4K UHD and automatically stitches both cameras' video together in camera so you don't have to do it later in post because that would not be very fun. It's also able to shoot 30-megapixel 360-degree stills and has modes for superlapse, time-lapse, as well as loop movies. It's rugged, waterproof down to 30 meters, shockproof to 2 meters, and freeze-proof down to minus 10 Celsius, which is 14 degrees Fahrenheit. The Key Mission 360 will be available on October 2016 for $500 US and is available right now for pre-order. Nikon also introduced the Key Mission 170, which is aimed at those that might otherwise buy a GoPro Hero 5 Black. It has an 8.3-megapixel CMOS sensor, an f2.8 lens, and it can capture 4K UHD footage. It has electronic vibration reduction, is waterproof down to 10 meters, shockproof from 2 meters, and freeze-proof down to minus 10 Celsius as well. The Key Mission 170 will also be available in October 2016 and goes for $400 US, and you can pre-order that right now as well. In addition to those two cameras, Nikon also announced its Key Mission 80, a wearable life-blogging camera which lets you capture 1080p full HD video or 12 megapixel stills at intervals as you go about your day. And of course, with a life-blogging camera, yes, that's right, there's a selfie camera built in as well. This one shoots just 5 megapixel images and has an f2.2 lens though. The Key Mission 80 automatically turns on when it's unclipped from its holder, transfers images via Nikon SnapBridge and Bluetooth. It has a 1.7-inch touchscreen on the back, and that allows users to change settings, play back what was just shot, and more. It's ruggedized as well, although not to the extent that the other two models are. This one's just waterproof down to 1 meter, shockproof from 1.8 meters, and freeze-proof down to minus 10 Celsius. If this cam sounds like the one for you, it'll be available sometime in October 2016 as well for $280 US and also is available for pre-order right now. You know, I really wonder to what extent people are using these things anymore. You capture a ton of video and then you have to deal with all of it later. Most people I know, myself included, bought a GoPro, used it a few times, it comes out on occasion, and then it goes in a drawer somewhere. And with these new cameras, being able to shoot 4K video, that takes up a ton of space. With photos, you can cull those and ditch the ones you don't want. But with video, unless you're going to edit it down and get rid of the original footage, which of course requires you to deal with said footage, which a lot of people don't do, you've got all this extra video sitting on your hard drives. I have friends that shoot video with their GoPros, they put it on the hard drives, and then they don't touch it again for like months or years. I guess it's just comforting knowing it's there and that someday you can view it. But what's the fun if you're going to shoot the video and you're never going to put it online for people to see? It's like with photos, right? Photos are meant to be seen. Same thing with video. Except for with video, of course, you want to edit it down. No one wants to look at a half hour of you going down the slopes, right? No, they don't. I know that sounds a little bit cranky, but it's true. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 109 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, feel free to email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, where I'm lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 110. Well, it's f8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.
As we've said before, these camera manufacturers and lens makers are going to be refreshing their lines. You don't often see... I don't know if I can say that.